Today's episode is proud to recognize the Alabama Nurses Foundation. Their mission? Supporting nursing scholarships and improving Alabama's nursing school facilities. You can help by choosing the Nurses Save Lives Distinctive Alabama Automobile Tag. Your purchase funds scholarships for future nurses and upgrades to teaching facilities statewide. Learn more and make a difference at www.alabamanursesfoundation.org. Together, let's invest in the nurses who save lives every day.
This first episode is gaining an understanding, a foundation for some practical things related to caregiving. This episode, we're going to be talking about providing education, a foundational education for caregiving. What are some vocabulary words? What are questions that caregivers need to ask? What are systems and resources available for caregivers? And I have in the room with me some amazing people. And I'm going to let them introduce themselves. I actually have two in the room with me. And then I have a friend from Savannah, Georgia that is calling in. So the first person is Chris Blackerby, who I mentioned earlier. Chris is Vice President of Sales at Senior Placement Services. Janice Williams is Senior Services Coordinator for Jefferson County. That's in Alabama. And Audrey Thorpe is a hospice nurse with Hospice Savannah. So, Chris, I'll let you start and introduce yourself to our listeners.
Well, Stacia said, I attended Sanford with Stacia and went into healthcare. I've spent over 30 years in the healthcare arena, the majority of that working in senior housing industry in Birmingham. The last six of those with senior placement services, helping families, helping caregivers through the often confusing decisions they need to make, if they need to make a decision about moving out of the home, and just coming alongside them and being a resource for them to guide them in that journey.
Thank you, Chris. Janice, please share with us your background.
Good afternoon. Well, I started out as a geriatric case manager with the Office of Senior Citizen Service, which was the area agency on aging at that time, back in 1999. Then I became the assistant coordinator for the Alabama Cares Program, which is a state program through the Alabama Department of Senior Services. And then once the coordinator retired, I became the coordinator for that program through 2016. And after 2016, the county relinquished that program, and we became Jefferson County Community Services Department, and I'm the Senior Service Coordinator for our Senior Services Division. So we offer different types of services and programs than previously before, but we're really enjoying our work with the aging population for over 20 years.
Thank you, Janice. Audrey Thorpe is a friend of mine from China. We worked and served together in Tianjin, China. And so, Audrey, tell us a little bit more about your background.
Yes, I am a nurse. I've been a nurse for a little over 40 years, but I've not worked the entire time. I've worked 25 years, took off time to raise our children. I've worked most of my career in adult medicine, the last 4 years being in hospice, doing home visits. And I really feel like it has just been a sweet culmination of my professional experiences and personal experiences, as I lost my dad to cancer when I was in the middle of nursing school. He had cancer my whole childhood. And then my mother, who passed when I was in my 40s, and granted, we were in China most of the time, but, you know, just understanding a little bit more of what people go through when losing a loved one. And I just really feel like at this point in my career, it's both my professional calling and my spiritual calling. So I really love what I do, and I am interacting with patients and caregivers every time I walk in to do a visit.
Great. Thank you, Audrey. And Chris, if I'm not mistaken, you got into the placement services because, am I right, that your parents or you needed the services at some point?
Not my parents directly, but mostly people at church.
Okay.
At my church. I had spent the majority of my career on the operations side of managing senior communities, and I had my own burnout period. It's a lot. It's 24/7. But I always enjoyed working with families. That was the favorite part of what I did, working with the sons and daughters of the senior adults and working with senior adults. I think I have a special gift for speaking elder. And so when I decided to step back from operations, a friend of mine from here in Birmingham, we were both in the industry, and he said, you know, we need to take a break and do something else, and this was just a natural fit. So we get to keep our hand in the senior housing world and knowing all of our contacts, but we're strictly there to act as an advocate for these families. Mm. And we walk with them through that journey. And the best part is our services are free to the families.
Right.
They get the benefit of, between my partner and I, over 50 years of experience. But they get the benefit of our experience to help them walk through that journey. We ask a lot of questions, do a lot of background before we ever step foot in a community to go visit, because we want to make sure we've got the right fit.
Yeah. And I can say that your help was invaluable to my family with my dad. Invaluable. So I'm so thankful that you're willing to come on and share with our listeners. All right, so I think we'll start with, and Janice, I'll start with you in terms of, I think sometimes if someone has not been a caretaker, if this is a new experience for them, so let's imagine you're at the doctor with your spouse, and the doctor says, it's cancer and it's terminal. You don't even know. I think most of us wouldn't know where to start. Like, you're in shock, maybe denial. You're experiencing grief. The person, I mean, that first stage of grief, the person who's been given that diagnosis is experiencing grief. And now you have to make decisions about care and think about, you know, maybe the long-term care at certain points. So we'll start with you, Janice, but can you give us, what are some of the things that people need to know? What questions do they need to ask upon the diagnosis is given and it becomes obvious that some kind of caregiving is going to take place?
Well, a lot of times, not so much cancer, but I deal with a lot of families who have to get diagnosis of dementia or something for it. But even with cancer, I always say you have to, once you get over the shock and everything of what you're experiencing, I think it's good to ask the physician too, what should I expect? Mm. Do you anticipate this being, is it just surgery that's going to be able to help, or is it beyond that? And sometimes, what does the patient want? Because sometimes they don't want what the physician is asking or referring. You know, they may say, oh, well, he needs some. I've known a lot of patients say, nope, I don't want anything done. I just want to live this out, and I don't want to go through treatments. I don't want to do that. So it's good to know what your loved one wants to do, honor their wishes. And then I would say, then that kind of helps you decide what you're gonna be able to do or what you need to do. But find out from the physician kind of what to expect. It's gonna be, because sometimes people have a quick decline. They go down faster than others. Some people start to see other things. And some people, it's a slower process. So kind of know what to expect with the whatever the diagnosis might be, and then what steps you need to take. And then if it's something where the patient is going to be a slow decline, but you see you need help, then contact your family. I think it's good if you have children, whatever, have a family conversation with the loved one and the rest of the family to make them aware of what's going on. And then you come together with what's going to be needed, the support you're going to need. And like I said, if you don't have it, then get those medical documents we talked about previously before we start this in place, so that whenever or if something happens, those matters are already taken care of. You don't have to wonder about the wishes of your loved one. You don't have to worry about power of attorney. You don't have to worry about a will, and all those things are already in place. And because a lot of families don't want to have to make certain decisions. They struggle with having to make those decisions. So if that's already done, it makes it a little easier for them if you have that. And to make them as comfortable as possible. And I would say, depending on what the doctors may have told you, what to anticipate, to prepare your home. Sometimes, a lot of times, we need to make our homes more handicap accessible. If we feel that we're going to need a hospital bed, we may need grab bars, we may need a raised toilet seat. Mm-hmm. You may need, at some point, you might need a walker. You might need some type of security cameras if you're going to have people come into your home to help provide care. So a lot of things you have to just look at that and then kind of decide. But I would say find out what the wishes of your loved one is. That way you're honoring them and still being able to provide the care also.
That's really important. When my dad was ill, that was one of the most frustrating things to me, because every time he'd go to a new hospital or come back to rehab, I never could determine whether they had all those papers that we had filled out. And it was very, we did not actually get that into place until hours before he died. Wow. So somebody talk about, like, what are those documents and where's the best place to get help getting those documents? They're legal documents. So how do you go about getting the documents? What do they need and how can they get them?
Well, from my experience, getting a good elder law attorney involved, if at all possible, the basics of powers of attorney, healthcare powers of attorney, financial powers of attorney, living wills, those are probably the basics.
Can you define those two documents, Chris?
Yeah, so living will just basically lays out what the person's wishes are. Like Janice said, they don't want extraordinary means of life-saving. So they wouldn't want to be put on a respirator, or they wouldn't want to be put on a artificial feeding tube or something of that nature. The problem with the living will is that it can be overridden by the family. And when you have a family in crisis, you may have siblings that don't necessarily agree. One thinks mom's wishes should be followed, and the other one's like, nope, we're going to do everything we possibly can to keep mom around. And that may not be what mom wants. That's why she has a living will.
Is that where a DNR or a do not resuscitate would also be in that living will?
Yeah, it's a separate document. Here in Alabama, it's different in different states, but here in Alabama, the DNR form is actually signed by the patient and by their doctor.
Okay.
And you would take that with you if you went to a hospital setting. That's one of the questions they ask you when you're admitted is, do you have a living will? Do you have a DNR? Now, the powers of attorney, there's financial powers of attorney that give you permission to act on their behalf, to transact business for them, selling property, buying property, selling assets, being on a bank account, things like that. And then there's medical powers of attorney that give you the ability to make medical decisions for that person if they're incapacitated or if they're not able to, for whatever reason, they're unconscious or they're not able to give their permission for treatment. So that's a very basic overview.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. I think that's important because if you have never seen one of these documents, you don't know what it is. And they ask you in the hospital, do they have this? And you're like, I don't even know what that is. So I have no idea. So, Audrey, what questions do you think like the caregiver should ask? What are some things that you think are real important that we haven't talked about?
So we often ask on, oftentimes I do what's called an initial visit. And that is after our admission nurse has done her visit, I come into the home and do a visit with the patient and the family 24 to 48 hours after they've been admitted. Oftentimes they can be very overwhelmed. One of the questions I ask towards the end of my visit, I will ask if the patient is coherent, I'll ask the patient, but I'll also ask the caregiver, what are your goals for us while this patient is on hospice? What are your goals for the patient? What are your goals for the hospice team? Because we want to all be on the same page. Some of them are like, I don't know. I'm overwhelmed. I don't know where to begin. So sometimes I'll give them some guidance and just reinforce that hospice care is for comfort and symptom management. So is your goal for us to keep this patient comfortable? Yes. Is your goal for more assistance in the home with some of their activities of daily living? Oh, yes, I need. Do you need one of our CNAs to come in to help with bathing? Yes. When our social worker comes in to do her initial visit, which has to be within 5 days of admission, she will explain to them about respite care, and she will emphasize the whole idea of caregiver burnout and explain the whole respite care, which is, I think, something you're going to address later in the podcast. But, you know, oftentimes they just don't know what questions to ask. They're overwhelmed. They're still possibly processing the diagnosis. And then they're going, well, I have to care for this loved one in the home, and I don't even know where to begin. Am I, you know, how quickly are they going to decline? And how do I manage these symptoms? And now I've also been given all these medications, and I don't know what's what. So that's when we say, that's what we're here for. We're going to walk you through this. And education, education, education is huge for us. So while they may not know what questions to ask, because we have done this so much, we help fill in the gaps when they don't know what questions to ask. And we can help them anticipate what their questions are going to be and things that they're going to wrestle with. And then I also say to them, you know, before a nurse comes in to visit again in X number of days, I would like you to write down what questions come to mind. Because, of course, after I leave, you're going to think of a lot of things and go, oh, I should have asked this. Oh, well, I'll ask next time. Well, it's like going into the doctor's office, I tell them. You know, you show up at the doctor's, you and I show up at the doctor's office and go, oh, I did want to ask him about something, but I forgot what it was. Or you go into the doctor and he says, how are you? And you're like, I'm fine. I feel great today. And you go home and you go, oh, I really meant to address this. And it's the same thing. The nurse comes into the home and how's everything going? And you're like, I think it's okay. But just go ahead, every thought, question, problem that you encounter, write down and bring it to the nurse's attention next time she's there.
That's really good advice. And I talk in Sir Thrival a lot about writing things down. I think it's really important, well, for everyday life, but especially when you're grieving, your brain is just so full of emotions and, you know, the grief fog, as I call it. And so I think writing things down is really important. Let's talk about some of the people that are helpful in helping a caregiver figure things out. Audrey, you're a hospice nurse. There's county resources. There's state resources. There's, if the person has Alzheimer's, there's, you know, Alzheimer's. We'll start with you, Janice, and just talk about some of the people or the resources that are available. And we will put these on MySirThrivalPodcast.com website, so you don't have to, if you're driving your car, you don't have to stop and write it down. But talk about some of the resources that you think are most helpful for caregivers.
So a lot of times, depending on the level of care, what that person is physically able to do, we call the activities of daily living. If they need help with certain things, or if they're somewhat independent. So there's a program called Alabama Cares that I spoke of, C-A-R-E-S, of Jefferson County. It's unskilled respite care. It's through United Way of Central Alabama. They provide temporary unskilled care. And through that program, they also provide incontinence supplies. And they also provide adult daycare assistance also. And that's an awesome program. It is a temporary program. Thinking they give like an allotment of funds they set aside for the caregiver. And that program, the caregiver is the client, and the person they're caring for is the recipient. And so that money set aside, and they have contracts with home health agencies, adult daycare centers, where you can use those funds, and it's deducted each time until you get to zero balance. And I think they do maybe allow you to wait out a year, and then you can maybe apply for the program again. And then they also have Alabama Lifespan Respite. It's in Huntsville, but they serve Central Alabama. They have a various programs. It's like they provide, it's like a reimbursement program where you can pay, but you can choose your caregiver, and you can pick it, and you use those funds to pay, and then they reimburse you. And they also have other programs under Alabama Respite, Lifespan Respite. And then we have the Senior Companion Program through Positive Maturity. It has companion services. And it's a great program because they usually have seniors that are 55 years and older who live within a 5-mile radius of their community. So if someone kind of in their age that they can relate to and talk to, that can be a companion for them. It's great for caregivers because it gives caregivers a break if they are working or if they need to be at home or if they don't have family, but they still need some companionship. So that's a great program, and it's no cost. They give the companions a stipend, like for gas and food. So it's a great program. And then there's another program if you're, it's for incontinence supplies. So just say you're not eligible to be on another program, but there's a program called Daisy Diaper Banks that has incontinence supplies that can provide incontinence supplies to seniors. Say they might not be eligible for our program through senior services. We have programs for people who do not have caregivers. So we could refer them to Daisy Diaper Banks. That's a great program. Then you have Alzheimer's of Central Alabama. If your loved one has a diagnosis of dementia, they can get their assistance through incontinence supplies. They have a scholarship program for adult daycare, things like that. And they also have tracking bracelets in case your loved one tends to wander. And so they have a lot of, and then you might kind of apply through the Medicaid waiver program through the Regional Planning Commission, where they have like companion programs and they have other assistance too if they qualify.
Okay. Chris, or maybe Audrey, can you guys talk about some of the, like a medical social worker or people like senior placement services, what some of the education, some of the resources outside of maybe your county or state resources that Janice mentioned? Audrey, I know you're in Georgia, but like, can you talk about from the medical standpoint, like a medical social worker or the hospice nurse, some of those resources where when you don't know what to ask, they can help guide you?
I feel like I'm very limited in my knowledge of that because our social worker is much more aware of those resources. I'm just much more aware of Hospice Savannah Incorporated and what our services offer. So I feel like I'm very limited in understanding what Chatham County, where our company is based out of, but we also serve three other counties, and I'm in Bryan County, so I feel like I'm limited in my knowledge of that.
Great. Okay. Chris, you anything to add on that?
You know, honestly, we're very lacking in community resources outside of dementia.
Wow.
There are, I mean, Janice mentioned several good resources for dementia, and several of those I'm very familiar with. But when it comes to cancer support or, you know, congestive heart failure support, I mean, all the other diagnoses
Parkinson's
that you can have,
Parkinson's, or ALS,
yeah,
or, yeah.
It's somewhat spotty, unfortunately. And most of your care, social workers are facility-based. So they're based in the hospital. They're based in the rehab center. They're not actually out in the community in a private setting. So that's something we're lacking.
Hmm. You know, I saw something in USA Today, and Audrey may have brought it to my attention, but Alabama is one of the states that we're reaching a critical crisis of not having resources needed to help take care of people who are ill and need care. As the population ages, it is a real issue. So I think, listeners, if you find yourself in the caregiving seat, it's important that you be proactive and you reach out to people from this podcast or from, you know, do a Google search on Alzheimer's in your area. But, you know, this is a crisis. And so I guess that is why so many people said to me, Stacia, please do a series on caregivers. So we are going to continue this conversation with our next episode with our same cast of characters. And so I just wanted to let you know what is coming up after this group does one other kind of caregiver introduction. The plan is to have, we'll have two different panels of people who have taken care or are taking care of someone that has a terminal illness, and they'll be telling their stories. I also would really like to have an episode on burnout, and so bring in some new folks to kind of help caregivers find respite care and find ways to survive while they're taking care of someone who may not be surviving. And then lastly, I would really like to do an episode from the perspective of a person who has a terminal illness. So if you have ideas of someone who may be interested in being on the podcast and talking about things from their perspective, I would love to hear from you. So I want to thank the panel for being here today, for Audrey Thorpe from Savannah, Georgia, who's a hospice nurse, for Janice Williams, who works for Jefferson County Senior Services, and for Chris Blackerby, who works with Senior Placement Services. Thank you all for being here, and we'll see you back on the next episode of Survival. Thank you for listening to Survival, the podcast about befriending grief. My hope is that something you've learned today has piqued your interest and you can take a baby step in your own healing journey. I would love to hear from you. To send me a message or even tell me your story, go to survivalpodcast.com. If you'd like to book me as a speaker, you can also do that through the Contact Me section of my website. Please follow me and tell your friends.